statements and not necessarily those of Absolute Broadcasting, its staff, or advertisers. It's time for Israel is Real. Two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. Rahel and Sonia focus on life in modern 21st century Israel, telling the stories of ordinary people living in, loving, and in support of an extraordinary land. Israel is Real is a community-supported program featuring interviews with local, national, and international celebrities, personal life stories, and call-ins. Learn a new Hebrew word every week. Israel is Real. Every Friday on 1590 WSMN. Nashua's News and Talk. And now, your hosts, Rahel and Sonia.
Hi, we're Rahel
and Sonia.
And this is Israel, Israel, the free voice for Israel. Boker tov lekol ha'mazinim.
Tzoraim tovim b'Yisrael.
From WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. You can hear us also on internet radio, wsmnradio.com. And first and foremost, we would like to express our condolences to the Conroy family who lost their daughter, Lori, on Tuesday evening, who passed away suddenly at age 35. And we'd like to really convey our condolences to Lori's daughter, Katriel, who is going to continue to be loved and raised by her grandparents, Larry Conroy, and his wife and their surviving family. So, Larry, we wish you all the best. And Boker Tov, Sonia.
Boker Tov.
We are experiencing some good weather, a little cold, but sunny at least. Mm-hmm. We got to give the weather report, right? But let's start with our Hebrew word.
Yeled.
Yeled. Okay.
Yeled is from, it's a word coming from the verb laledet, which means to give birth. Yeled is a child. And yeledim also means children. But the form that I would like to emphasize is yeldei. Yeldei, it's a compound hyphenated word, yes. Mm-hmm. And we will speak about Yaldei Avraham.
Yaldei Avraham, the children of Abraham.
Yes.
Abraham's children.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, before we get there, I'd like to hear a little bit of beautiful Hebrew music. And this is going out to the Conroy family.
Thank you.
Eli, Eli. Is a poem by Chana Senesh, and it speaks about all the beautiful things that we will remember to the Conroy family. And that was Eli Eli, a beautiful poem by Chana Senesh, who herself perished in the World War II trying to save Jews. And our guest this morning is Mr. John Entine. He is an author, a journalist, a think tank scholar, and an organizational consultant. He's a senior fellow at the Statistical Assessment Service, which is also known as STATS, at George Mason University, where he is the founding director of the Genetic Literacy Project. His resume includes 19 years as a network television news producer, probably much more versed than we are at this point, but he worked for ABC and CBS News. He was Tom Brokaw's longtime producer at NBC and has won more than 20 awards, which included Emmys, for all his work. He published the book Abraham's Children, Yildei Avraham, which is Race, Identity, and the DNA of the Chosen People in 2007, which merges genealogy, genetics, and religion to vividly bring to life a new understanding of Western identity and the shared biblical ancestry of the Jews, the Christians, and the Muslims. It also addresses the effort to identify cures for diseases that disproportionately impact specific populations and the social, political tempest that a renewed focus on race research is stirring. And some of the reviews that he's gotten, for example, from the Library Journal, John Entine's explorations take him from his own Jewish family member's cancer diagnosis to genetic labs, both academic and commercial, across the world, with lengthy forays into Jewish history, the history of Israel and Zionism, and the split between social anthropology and biological anthropology. And Nature Genetics calls it a broad, well-documented sweep of Jewish history that will inform even the most knowledgeable of readers. So we've invited John Entine to speak today about genetics. Boker Tov, Mr. Entine.
I'm glad to be on your show. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's exciting for us, too. Let's start with maybe when did you get the idea to research the Jewish DNA?
Well, it's really a research into Jewish identity. I'm Jewish, bar mitzvahed, but although I've always retained a strong pride in my Jewish heritage, my beliefs really very much lapsed over time, and some of my connections to Judaism also lapsed. And as that was evolving over time, I also had moved in my professional life to examining genetic issues. I had written I had actually produced for Tom Brokaw, as you mentioned. I worked with Tom, international documentary focusing on genetics and sports, and then came out with a book in 2000 on genetics and sports called Taboo, Why Black Athletes Dominate Sports and Why We're Afraid to Talk About It, which created an international stir. It was a bestseller, 2020, did a profile of it, lots of attention. But what it did was create a very, I think, highbrow but accessible conversation about genetics and genetic differences, which can be pretty explosive stuff. The whole issue of race, Jews have been on the short stick of that for much of their history, culminating, of course, in the Holocaust. So it's a very touchy issue for blacks, for Jews, and others to talk about so-called genetic differences. And it wasn't an issue I planned to take up focusing on my Jewishness until shortly after the publication of my Taboo book. My sister was diagnosed with breast cancer. Mm. And it stirred up some very horrible memories in our family, besides obviously the obvious challenge that she was facing. When I was a teenager, my mother, my aunt, and my grandmother all died within a two-year period living at my house.
Wow.
All of either breast or ovarian cancer. And we did not know much about cancer for much of the 20th century. We thought it was caused by cultural, environmental factors, what you ate, what you just encountered in the course of your life. But by the end of the 20th century, scientists began to isolate actual genetic mutations that were a cause of cancers, and they actually isolated three specific mutations on genes that either originated in Jews or were commonly found in Jews, and they were called colloquially, and there's always a danger in these kinds of things, Jewish mutations. Mm-hmm. And essentially, if you had one of these three mutations, you were either you were just somehow had Jewish ancestry. You were either Jewish today or you had Jewish ancestry. And my sister, when she went in and was diagnosed, it was found not only that she had cancer, but she had one of these Jewish mutations. So suddenly we were facing this family challenge, tragedy perhaps, and we realized that that she was a Jew by DNA. She was what Hitler said she was. And I went and got tested and found out that I, too, carry the same mutation that felled my family members. And since found out that my daughter carries it as well, like my young daughter. So, it dramatically escalates your chances of getting cancer from the average person's chances are, I don't know, 10% or so. And for a person who carries the mutation that I carry, if you're a female, your chances are up to 80% or higher over the course of your lifetime. And even for a male, my chance of getting breast cancer is like 7%, which is, astounding for a male. So it's a serious issue, and suddenly I began confronting the issue of my Jewish DNA. And since I had looked into the issue in sports before, it became fertile territory for me to revisit the issue, and also, frankly, re-explore my Jewish identity and see the multiple threads of identity that define Jewishness, the classic who is a Jew question.
Yeah, classic Jewish who's a Jew question. So, wow, that's a pretty explosive story. And this sort of thrust you into the research. And tell us about the research. Where did you go from there?
Well, I had some template, some background on this as a result of, my research into the book Taboo. So I had many connections with geneticists around the world. And, the key issue for Jews looking into this was the high number of so-called Jewish diseases. Because Jews are what you would call an insular population, Jews have, throughout their history, lots of times because they've chosen to be a closed population, they've stuck together. Judaism is what I call a tribal religion. It is one of the few, all religions, if you go back 2,500 years, were so-called tribal religions, meaning that a religion was based in a certain geographical area. Christianity and Islam are what are called faith-based religions. They're purely faith-based. One comes to those religions no matter what your ancestry is. But in Judaism, your ancestry historically meant a lot, and even today, if you convert to Judaism, immediately Judaism is passed on through the mom's genes, so to speak. It becomes a defining factor in whether you're Jewish under Jewish law. So ancestry plays a great is one of the multiple threads of Judaism, along with religious belief and also the fundamental central notion tenet of Israel as a founding center of Judaism. Those are the three, what I would call the three threads of the Jewish tribal religion. So I began dealing and understanding and trying to decipher these kinds of things. And there's a web of science research out there that has looked into so-called Jewish diseases, mutations that cause diseases that where Jews are overrepresented. Why? Again, because historically Jews have intermarried over the course of Jewish history up until about a generation or two ago.
You mean intermarried within a Jewish community?
Yes, within the Jewish community. So I guess that's a better way to say it. Otherwise, I'd be confusing people. But Jews have married within the Jewish community. The rate of outmarriage was 0.5%, which geneticists, population geneticists, Jewish, non-Jewish, whoever, who look into this, have said that among all the populations of the world, and a population is defined by a group with fuzzy edges who ends up sticking together. So examples of population would be Icelanders. It's a geographically isolated population. Or Mennonites, the Amish, they're a population defined by religion, but who stick together. Or the Basque region of Spain, which is, or Costa Ricans, again, geographical designations, mostly geographical. Most populations are geographical. Some, like Judaism and the Amish, are defined by religious or cultural separation. But among all the populations of the world, including large populations like West Africans, Jews had the highest rate of insularity and the lowest rate of outmarriage, which means not only do the all the characteristics of being Jewish stay within the population, and included in that is that if a mutation or some kind of disease related to your genetics appeared first in someone within that population, it stays within that population. And a lot of the diseases that are common among especially Ashkenazi Jews Ashkenazi, the breast cancer mutation.
Sorry, for our listeners, Ashkenazi meaning from a particular...
Ashkenazi are Jews from, who originated in Central and Eastern Europe and generally now populate all but Israel. There's three major groups of Judaism: Ashkenazi Jews, which are the European Jews who emerged only in, let's say, the 12th and 13th century. There's the Mizrahi, or the Oriental so-called Jews, who are indigenous to the Middle East. And then there's the Sephardic Jews of Spain and North Africa. Those are the three major divisions of Judaism. There's also a what's called the Roman Jewish population, which has blended in with both the Sephardi and the Ashkenazi population. But Ashkenazi Jewry, even though it didn't originate until the 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th centuries, and the number of Ashkenazi Jews were only 25,000 into the 1400s, and then exploded in size because of a just huge population boom that peaked about 15, 16 million in the 1930s. You know, they stayed together, intermarried. The walls of separatism were up, partly enforced within the Jewish community and partly enforced by hostility from non-Jews towards Jews. And all these Jewish diseases ended up proliferating. So there's Tay-Sachs disease people are aware of,
right,
and then a lot of other diseases people are not so aware of, but something called Niemann-Pick, various kinds of brain disorders, neurological disorders, a whole wide range, everything from Crohn's disease to various types of, I have a list of them in my book rather than just kind of,
right,
you know, they'd just be names to people right now. That's all created by Jewish insularity, which created a whole wide range of things. It reinforced cultural separatism. It reinforced cultural identity. So Jews are not only culturally distinct, we are also one of, if not the most genetically distinct population in the world, which makes us a gold mine for geneticists who want to explore how to conquer diseases, not only Jewish diseases, but all diseases. Jews are a wonderful laboratory, and thankfully many geneticists are Jewish and are taking advantage of the fact that Jews are this wonderful, interesting culture, both medically and otherwise.
I want to veer you, just ask you a question, Mr. Entine. We're speaking with John Entine from the book Abraham's Children, and you mentioned the research. I was just wondering, who has done this research? Has it been Jews mostly who are concerned with this kind of a thing?
Well, there's two main strands of research. There's the what's called the disease research, which I've referred to, and then there's a whole other strain into trying to recreate or understand Jewish history, and that's called population genetics. And the medical research is done by geneticists all over the world.
Hello?
But if you're interested in, let's say, breast cancer research...
Mr. Entine, we yes? Didn't hear you there for a minute. If you would just backtrack for a second.
I'm sorry. Am I coming in a little better now?
Yeah. No, we just beeped. It went blank for a minute. So you were talking about population genetics.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm saying in the area of population genetics, Jews, that area is explored by geneticists all over the world because the way to look at diseases, it doesn't matter what population you're looking at. You're really trying to look at patterns. And so, for instance, breast cancer is something that affects everybody. And if you're interested in studying breast cancer, you have to study the Jewish population among various populations. If you're interested in studying Tay-Sachs disease, you're going to look at Jews, but you're also going to look at another population, the French Canadians. Where a mutation appeared in the French Canadian population and has stayed very, very insular to that population. So Jews are just so the geneticists who look into that are from all over the world. Now studying Jewish ancestry again, although there are in this case there are scientists from all over the world also looking into that because there is a shared ancestry of Jews with other cultures, but I'd say a disproportionate number of those exploring issues of the specifics of tracing, let's say the Cohen gene, which I will talk about as the in the course of this conversation, that is done mostly by, but not exclusively by, geneticists who find it just fascinating to use DNA to recreate human history, and Jews played a central role in Western history. So you can't not study Jewish genetics, so to speak, if you're interested in Western history.
I have a question to you, sir, Mr. Antien. I'm wondering if this research is bringing us more closer to a healing process for breast cancer, let's say.
Oh, absolutely. We've made much progress into understanding how cancer, breast and ovarian cancer, work. The gene for breast cancer, the one of the three Jewish genes, so to speak, for breast cancer, was only isolated and identified in 1992. So up until that point, we really there was a fierce debate whether, as I mentioned, whether breast cancer was totally created by cultural and environmental factors or whether there were genetics, and that really made it clear that you needed to have the gene to have that specific kind of breast cancer, but there were cultural, social, environmental factors that touched off the gene, made it work, and those still remain mysteries. What are the triggers? Because you can carry this breast cancer mutation and not get breast cancer, for instance. So we still don't know. Is it gene-gene interaction? Do you need other genes that touch it off? We're beginning to understand how genes interact with each other, how genes interact with environmental factors, and it's really the focus on disease research as a result of frankly Jewish genetics has been remarkable. We've used it to literally wipe out Tay-Sachs disease in the Orthodox Jewish community. If you go back 30 or 40 years, it was very prevalent because of intense intermarriage among the Orthodox Jewish community, particularly in the United States. And now because we screen people for their genes, we help ensure that two people who are carriers of the Tay-Sachs mutations do not marry or do not have children, or if they have children, that their embryos are screened for Tay-Sachs disease to prevent these human tragedies. So we've come a long way, and we have a long way to go, but the study of Jewish genes is very much central to this effort.
Wow, this is amazing. This is very interesting. We have to cut out for a break, but maybe when we come back, we can talk a little bit about Jewish ancestry, shared cultures, things like that. We'll keep our listeners in suspense for a few minutes and keep you on the line. We're talking with John Entine of Abraham's Children. This is WSMN 1590. Israel is real.
Shomati shimeacho yoreti Adono Adonoi Shomati wani rejashti yomeboti fikadeni Adonoi for no zakha ki for no nu naina na naina na nai na 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 naina na nai na 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 naina na naina na nai na 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 na
Hi, this is Israel is Real, WSMN 1590. We'd love to remind you that we are enjoying your donations, and not personally, but we are very happy for your continued donations to keep our show on the air. We can't do it without you, literally. And so please keep your checks coming. When you write a check, please write it to Absolute Broadcasting and send it to our personal Israel Israel address, which is Israel Israel, P.O. Box 236, Milford, New Hampshire, 03055. Again, write the check to Absolute Broadcasting and send it to our personal email address, our personal post office box at Israel Israel, P.O. Box 236, Milford, New Hampshire, 03055. You can always visit our website at www.israelisraelnh.com, israelisraelnh.com, and email us. We'd love to hear your feedback as well at israelisrael1590@gmail.com.
I would suggest that everyone who is writing to our email is invited to tell us what it will be the preferences, what they will want to hear in the future, and we will try to make it happen.
Good idea. Thank you. And we'd like to remind you to contribute always to the JNF.org, the Jewish National Fund, which is helping to retree our forests. I never know how to say that properly. But we're planting trees in Israel, the JNF.org, JewishNationalFund.org. The patent and trademark law firm of Vern Main & Associates, a local firm with a global practice, is pleased to announce its new office location at 547 Amherst Street in Nashua and on the web at www.vernmain.com. For professional legal counseling on all intellectual property matters, please contact the legal specialists at Vern Main & Associates at their offices on 547 Amherst Street in Nashua. That's 547 Amherst Street in Nashua, New Hampshire. Or on the web at vernmaine.com. That's www.vernmaine.com.
Vision. Did you know that Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel? Did you know that Israel is approximately about the size of New Jersey? And did you know that we have 2 billion Christians around the world? We have 1.3 billion Islamic people around the world. We have 900 million Hindus. We have 360 million Buddhist people. And only 14 million Jewish people.
Wow.
To receive Vision's email alert and be informed about Vision educational activities and opportunities, please visit Vision website at www.newhampshireforisrael.org. That's www.nh4israel.org. And Rachel, this lady which is sitting with me, is spreading beautiful music around the globe. To hear Rachel's unique sound and to book Rachel to perform for you live, go to www.rachelmusic.net, which is www.rahelmusic.net.
And we are WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk, and this is Israel Israel, the free voice for Israel. And Boker Tov again, Sonia.
Boker Tov.
And we are, again today, speaking with John Entine, who has written a book called Abraham's Children about genetics. And John, are you still with us?
I am. Can I give a plug for the website that people can go to that has background, like a sample chapter, and all kinds of information if people want to explore whether they're interested in this subject?
You have to ask. Of course you can.
Okay.
Please.
The website is www.abrahamschildren.net. No apostrophe, because you can't use them, of course, in URLs. So abrahamschildren.net. If they go to that, it has every review that's been written about it, and there's been dozens. There's been some wonderful stories. Jewish Life Television did a profile of it. There's examples of speeches that I've given, sample chapter, and lots of background that, about the whole subject of Jewish identity, discussions of Jewish diseases, and some controversial subjects that I think we may even take up before the end of this hour. Discussion of Jewish IQ, which is actually being studied by geneticists because of its link to, interestingly enough, Jewish diseases. So lots of material to get your hands on there, and people might find it interesting, and hopefully maybe one or two will even buy the book. It's still selling quite well on Amazon, and it's gotten lots of attention from Christians as well as Jews. It's very much a story of the shared ancestry and the seminal ancestry of Jews to Western civilization.
Let's talk about that. And before we get into the controversial subject of IQ, let's talk a little bit about Jewish ancestry, the shared cultures. I'm also interested because I am a Bat Kohen. I'm a daughter of a Kohen, the priestly line. And I was interested also in how that works. I understand that there's a gene that connects the priestly line. So if we could talk a little bit about that, the ancestry and the shared cultures.
Sure. What really put the study of Jewish genetics on the map, besides the two strains of it, one, of course, was the exploration of disease genes, and with a big breakthrough being the isolation of the first Jewish breast cancer mutation back in the early 90s. But later on in the 90s, there was this big stir about using genetics to trace ancestry. Some of us might remember the big controversy over Thomas Jefferson, and what, you know, did he father some blacks
right,
as well, and ways to trace back some of the some ancient figures. There was what was some of the Iceman that they an Iceman they discovered in a cave where they're modern descendants of that. So there were a number of ways that we were using ancestry to using DNA to uncover ancestry, and it spilled over into the Jewish community. In that, it's a fascinating story. A nephrologist from Canada who happens to be a Cohen, and should I explain what that is to your audience?
A Cohen is from Aaron, tracing back to Aaron as the sort of the father of spiritual line.
Sure. If you know, there's the tribes of Israel, and there wasn't a there is the Aaron line. The Cohen is not one of the original tribes of Israel, but Moses and Aaron, when they went into the desert, are Levites, and because of God's will and Moses' actions, Aaron was appointed as the high priest, Moses' brother. And to supervise the goings on, and then was the desert temple, and ultimately, Aaron's descendants became supervisors of what went on in the inner bastions of the temple, and they became known as Kohanim, which means the priests.
Right.
The people who supervised the outer goings of the temple were the Levites. We call them maybe junior priests. I don't know, whatever you want to call them. So it became part of Jewish lore, Jewish history, that everybody who is a Cohen today, and it could be you could have the name Cohen, or you could just be embedded in your in your historical history, in your ancestry, but that you were a descendant, a long lost descendant, so to speak, of Aaron, the Aaronite line. And a lot of people thought this was apocryphal. This wasn't really true. This was just a Jewish myth. How could that possibly be that everybody today who claims an oral history, an oral link, and the reason it's oral, by the way, is because with the destruction of the Second Temple in the first century, there was no real temple to oversee, and Jews wanted to preserve this tradition. So they essentially set it up as an oral tradition, and that it'll become a Jews will actually supervise the Aaronite line. A Cohen will supervise what goes on inside the temple when it's rebuilt again, because ultimately now what a Cohen does is they perform certain ceremonies within the Jewish congregation, including channeling God to the congregation. There's certain obviously restrictions that also go along with being a member of the Jewish priesthood. So they thought, people thought it was apocryphal, and a nephrologist by the name of Carl Skoretsky, he was a Canadian at that time. He's since become an Israeli. And he was sitting in synagogue in Canada, and he was actually in a Sephardic synagogue that one day. And the a Jewish, a Kohen, was doing the Birkas Kohanim, which is a way that you, again, channel God through yourself to the congregation. And person holds up their hand, similar to the way
Leonard Nimoy, Spock, right?
Yeah, Leonard Nimoy did. Spock did in the, because Spock was an Orthodox Jew who used the symbol of that to say what his you know, his so-called alien ancestry was. His alien ancestry was frankly just being Jewish, and he said, you know, something that this Sephardic Jew says that he's descended from Aaron, and I say I'm descended from Aaron. You know, something, we now have markers on the Y chromosome. The Y chromosome in males doesn't change from generation to generation, because unlike every other part of our DNA, or almost every other part of our DNA, it doesn't mix, because when a male and a female combine their sperm and their egg, the female isn't contributing anything. She has no Y chromosome to contribute, so it doesn't change. The difference between, like, my DNA, my Y chromosome, and my father's is only potential mutations that might have occurred on it. Otherwise, my Y chromosome is identical to my father's, mm-hmm. and my father's is identical to his genetic father's, my grandfather, and so on down the line. So, theoretically, if Carl Skoretsky's DNA was looked at, and this Sephardic Jew's, this Cohen's DNA was looked at, they would be identical, except for potential mutations. And because mutations appear in your DNA at a set rate, that we just understand how genetics works, you actually could trace the fact and confirm the fact that they have a shared ancestry. And so he says, let me test this. And he went to the leading Y chromosomal expert in the United States, who was at Arizona State University, a guy named Michael Hammer, and proposed this to Michael Hammer. And Hammer said, sure, we can test this out. He says, this will be a great, like, you know, like, graduate school project for our students. You know, maybe we'll get an article in the Tucson Daily News or something like that. Well, how cool would that be?
Yeah.
And they actually did this study, and they tested Jews from around the world. And remarkably, they found out that 80% of Kohanim carry a set of genetic markers that confirm that they have a shared ancestry that goes back about 2,300 years. So it literally reconfirmed that the apocryphal story of the of Cohen status is not just apocryphal; it's real. That whether it confirms there was a real Aaron, that we can't confirm, but there was an Aaron-like figure in Jewish history. There is one man that 80% of Jewish males who claim Cohen status can trace their ancestry to. And so I can tell you, though, it not only made the front page of the Jewish Daily News in Tucson, but it actually made the headlines of the New York Times, Scientific American, and almost every science and newspaper in the world, and really launched the whole international excitement of exploring Jewish genes to recreate biblical ancestry.
Mr. Entine, my question is, you start speaking about the Jewish IQ and how it's related to the diseases.
Yes.
It's very interesting. We really can speak here for at least 4 hours, but...
We've got about, I don't know, 8 or 9 minutes left. Maybe you can delve into the issue of the controversial issue of IQ.
I've already mentioned the issue that Jews, Ashkenazi Jews, because of intermarriage, have a lot of so-called Jewish diseases. And about half of the Jewish diseases tend to be neurologically based. Believe it or not, people don't understand this. There's something called DNA repair, where our DNA constantly repairs itself when little things go wrong, and some of the repair mechanisms are actually based in our brain. And even breast cancer is part of that DNA repair mechanism.
Uh oh, the mind body connection, huh?
And the mind body
there's something to it.
about half of the diseases affect your neurological, your nervous system, or your brain. And Jews have a disproportionate number of these diseases. And a lot of them cause one of two things. They either cause something like breast cancer, or they cause what's called dendrite overproduction. It causes that the connections, the neural connections in the brain, are overproduced as a result of these genetic mutations. Now, if they're only overproduced a little bit, that causes higher ability for the brain to function at a higher level, which translates into higher IQ. If they produce at an extraordinary high level, which happens numerous times, then you actually have this genetic disease that occurs. And these genetic diseases could be anything, again, from breast cancer to Niemann-Pick to Tay-Sachs disease, which all have a neurological basis to it. And scientists were always wondering, how come these diseases have not essentially been erased from the Jewish genome? What do I mean? Bad genes, bad neurological problems, bad genetic problems tend to be to phase out of the human genome over time, because people who have those diseases tend to not reproduce as much. You just think of it fairly logically. If you have a debilitating disease, you're not going to have as many kids as someone who's healthy. And over time, the healthier genes tend to spread, and the not-so-healthy genes tend to go away. It's called the difference between positive mutations, good genes, and negative mutations, bad genes. And an example of a good gene that we all know about is the ability to process milk and dairy products. It's called lactose tolerance. Some people are lactose intolerant, believe it or not, and people who are lactose intolerant tend to think they have something that's wrong with them. Actually, lactose intolerance, the inability to process dairy products, is the human blueprint. But there was a mutation that occurred, and then over time, and numerous mutations that allowed people to process milk. Those mutations are called positive mutations, and they were so positive that they spread, and now the majority of the world population can process milk as a result of those genetic mutations. Well,
now, I'm going to rush you along a little bit because we're going to run out of time. So what's that have to do with IQ?
What has to do with IQ is that disease genes have not disappeared. And the reason they haven't disappeared is because they probably confer some positive advantage, and that's higher IQ. And these disease genes are concentrated in Jews, and a slew of scientists have focused on this research and found out that they believe that the fact that Jews unequivocally have about a 10 to 15 point higher IQ than any other population in the world. The average IQ is about 100. The average Jewish IQ ranges between 107 and 115. And Jewish verbal IQ, the ability to speak in a sophisticated way, it ranges as high as 123. That puts Jews in the top 1% of IQ on average among populations in the world. That's probably as a result of having these Jewish diseases, and it's balanced out by high Jewish IQ. So the fact that Jews are disproportionately represented as Nobel Prize winners, that over half of the faculty in the Ivy League are Jewish, Jews are overrepresented in the genius levels by a factor of 40 relative to the size in the population. Scientists believe, and this is not Jewish scientists, these are Christian scientists who have come up with these theories. It's been presented in the New York Times, major scientific journals, but they believe that it's linked somehow to the prevalence of Jewish diseases, and that there's a genetic basis for high Jewish achievement. Very controversial, but considered very much mainstream research in this provocative area of disease research and ancestral research.
It's amazing. So we get it on both ends. We get the negative and the positive working for us in different ways.
Correct. So it's both a blessing and a curse.
Right.
Something that, again, you know, we all see differences in populations. We see it in athletic ability. We see it in brain behavior. Many things that we think are controversial, you know, the ability to run faster, for instance. We know that West Africans have a constellation of genes that allows them to run faster, and it's not a black-white issue. East Africans, which is a different population, East Africans are like Kenyans, they have a different set of genes, and they're not particularly fast. It has a lot to do with how they evolved, the West Africans evolving in the plains of West Africa, the East Africans evolving in the mountains of East Africa. Different genes have developed to adapt them to the various evolutionary challenges, whether it's geography or disease or whatever, that they faced. And Jews are just one more population that has had to adapt. And you go back in time, Jews were selected, culturally selected, by their literacy, by their ability to handle language, because it was the rabbis and the moneylenders in the communities who had the most children, so they automatically passed on their genes. And in the Christian community, the most intelligent, the most literate person ended up becoming a priest and didn't pass on their genes. And these had very much affected how the gene pools of different populations evolved during the Middle Ages.
Wow.
And scientists are discussing these very controversial subjects now.
And does this also affect behavior in any way? If certain peoples are gifted with athletic prowess or intellectual prowess, does this also affect behavior in some way?
It very much could. Again, this is where we're getting into more and more speculative areas. It's an area called sociobiology, and it looks at the links between social activities and biology. It's a it's part science and part speculation. But if there are many scientists exploring this, very famous and extremely well respected ones, and they think, for instance, Jewish joke telling. Comedians, being Jewish, being lawyers. We all think of that as just a Jewish mama, but it could be Jewish genes as well as a Jewish mama. You're going into areas where you have great facility for it. In terms of athletic ability, we know, for instance, that whites dominate weightlifting, hammer throw, all kinds of activities involving strength, and they definitely believe that that's related to the classic white body type, where arms and legs are short relative to the torso, while Africans, because they evolved in along the equator, they have longer arms and legs relative to their torsos to dissipate heat. Whites and Asians tend to need to keep their heat in because they evolved in colder weather climates, and that affects what kind of athletes tend to come out of those populations. These are things in the athletic area. This is a very uncontroversial thesis. In the area of behavior, in the area of intelligence, it's more controversial, but doors are opening in this all the time. And let's put it this way, scientists need to study this, because if we're going to develop, let's say, drugs to cure Alzheimer's disease, drugs to cure cancer, we're going to have to know how the brain works. And so we have to explore subjects, even if they seem a little radioactive, and even if we have to be on guard that we don't misuse this to rank various populations by various attributes, because individuals are individuals. No one is an average person. Everybody is an individual, and all genes do is define potential capacity. It doesn't say what any individual is, so we have to be careful not to use this to advance very simplistic race theories, which mm-hmm. Jews have been subject to and almost wiped out the Jewish population, as we all know.
Well, John Entine, this has been a pleasure, and we could talk. I wish we had 4 or 5 hours to talk with you today. I'll have to refer our listeners on to your website, which, again, if I got it correct, is abrahamschildren.net. That's
correct.
Abraham without
right.
the apostrophe. So one word, abrahamschildren.net. And we've been speaking with John Entine, who is the author of a book called Abraham's Children. And
And the second half is Race, Identity, and the DNA of the Chosen People.
Abraham's Children, Race, Identity, and the DNA of the Chosen People. Again, can be found on abrahamschildren.net without
but
the apostrophe.
Also through Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's a very well-received international bestseller, so you can get it anywhere.
It's great. We're really honored to have been able to speak with you today, and maybe we'll get you on again in the future and we'll continue this conversation. Thank you, Mr. Entine, John Entine, and thank you.
Thank you. It was great to talk to you.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom. So today, the Parashat Pekudei, the Torah tell us this week how Moses set up the Mishkan, which is the Holy Tabernacle. At the conclusion of this account, the Torah tells us how the Shekhinah, the God's Holy Spirit, filled the Mishkan, and that the Shekhinah dwelt on the Mishkan of the Bnei Israel, of the children of Israel, through their journey. Because we know that the lessons of the Torah are eternal, we can learn an inspirational lesson from this verse, namely that wherever the B'nai Israel will travel while in exile, the Holy Shekhinah will accompany them, as is hinted by into the phrase, through their journeys. And yes, the Shekhinah accompanies even those who are farthest from God.
And so does their DNA. Again, we've been speaking with John Entine, the author of Abraham's Children, Race, Identity, and the DNA of the Chosen People, Abraham's Children. This is Israel is Real, our theme song by Rachel, myself, rachelmusic.net. We're on the air every Friday, 10 to 11 in the morning on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. And we thank you. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.